stupid.
No.
It doesn't bother me. Doesn't it?
Okay, back to Dennis.
Yeah. When they took the shots at Dad, I knew that. And I mean, it was the same feeling. I mean, that, you know, that there's no way that we're gonna survive independently from the rest of the world, and that people are gonna sit back and watch us, you know, build communism and there's just no way. I mean, it's the same thing like when Dad was shot the first time. I thought that we could, you know, I knew people didn't agree with us and people were against us, but I thought they'd just be content with the way they felt, and we could, you know, stay, you know, to ourselves. But I know that there's no way. I mean, it was just the whole idealistic thing that we were going to build separately from the rest of the world. And it kind of just hit me again, you know, the same feeling. I mean, I reacted to it. I didn't react to it the same way, you know, like, because I'd learned to cope with it, you know. But at the same time, I don't know, like, let's say, like with Tim Sweeney, you know, he was supposed to be the big, you know, the big burly tough guy, you know, that's supposed to, you know, supposed to be, you know, unapproachable and everything. Supposed to be. When we were in the last few, you know, the last few minutes, what we were sure were the last few minutes, that me and him were like a team, and we just kind of broke down and just says, you know, I couldn't have gone down fighting with a better guy, you know. I mean, and we hugged and just said, you know, well, this is it, kind of, and that felt good to me, and like we've been closer ever since. You know, we've been able to relate a lot better ever since, because we both felt distant, because we both had this tough image. Not necessarily that I don't think that we have that image of ourselves, but everybody else has the image, and we didn't know how to relate to each other because we didn't know how much. Like, I didn't know if he believed it about himself, and I didn't, you know, and I'm sure he didn't know whether I believed it about myself. And we didn't know how to break the ice, and it kind of was a blessing, I guess. But the thing that hit me really hard was that I was separate from Dad. I mean, I knew Dad well enough that if anything went down, which, you know, we saw as inevitable, I mean, it was just a matter of time, I knew Dad would be the first to go. I mean, I knew he'd be right there. And all my brothers were with Dad. They went around with him everywhere. And I was separated from him because I knew a little bit about warfare and stuff, a little reading up I'd done, a little study, and a little first-hand experience. And it was required of me to be, you know, on security, to be guarding the place. So I was separated from him. And so, you know, I kind of resented it, because all my life I felt that I had made more of an effort than my other brothers to relate to Dad and try to please him, try to be close to him, and I wasn't hung up on a lot of the stuff that the other guys are, or were. And I always had fancied myself in my fantasies, you know, about coming in at the last minute, because I knew someday they were going to finally get Dad, and he was going to be on trial or something. Or they were going to have him back to the wall, and I'd come in at the last minute and just, you know, come in with him, and we'd fight together to the finish, right? And, you know, and just like the rest, you know, it's just like my whole life has been. Nothing worked out the way I'd liked it to, and I was stuck off away from Dad, and I knew we were going to die away from each other, and I'd probably never see him again. I remember how good I felt when the people saw that this guy was on the edge of the bush, and he called me over there. And I was praying that it would happen then, because I knew it was going to happen, and I'd hope they'd come then because I was with Dad. But I remember looking at all the people and how they, you know, they'd never experienced this before. You know, they'd never been on the edge of death, or, you know, they'd never identified with dying or fighting for what they believe. Because I'd always pulled away from all the people because I felt that they had rid in on Dad's love and his compassion, and never had to we'd had to suffer. Yeah, we'd had to suffer with Dad. So it was like we paid for the love we got, you know. And I always felt like they just got it, you know, and I resented it. And it was kind of like the thing that whole 6 days brought me closer and closer to the people, because I felt like they were now experiencing, you know, what I'd experienced in my 19 years. And I felt now that maybe they'd be more appreciative of what they had. And I felt they deserved it more now, you know. So I think the 6 day, the crisis was a blessing. It was a hell of a blessing, because it brought me back to reality. It brought me closer to people. And because that was my main flaw. I mean, if I ever wanted to get anything done for people, I needed to be able to relate to them better. And I had a hell of a time relating to people because I resented them so much. And I think it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. All I know is when I came down here, I mean, at first I didn't want to stay because Dad was going back, you know, and I'd always seen myself as Dad's personal overseer, you know. I mean, I was the one that, I honestly felt like all the security, I would look at, you know, the guys who were watching over Dad and stuff. It was kind of a big, tough guy thing. I never felt like they really took interest in it. You know? I always did. What worried about him watching and stuff, and I just was worried about him going back there and having nobody, which is unfair because I know there were people that did take concern in his personal welfare. But after I was here, you know, everything started. I started to have a purpose, you know, because like I just started to rebel against everything. You know, I'd get up in the morning and right off the bat, I mean, if I didn't have my, but I got down here and I started having hours again. You know, I'd wake up at a certain time. I knew what I had to do. You know, in the States, I never knew what I was going to do. I didn't know. I had no structure. And I got here and I could go out and work. No, I was doing something, because in the States, I mean, you knew what was right, but you knew you weren't doing it. You knew you weren't doing a damn thing. I mean, like, you know, if anything, you were turning people off. I mean, I was turning people off by the way I approached everything, because I was such a hostile person, such a hostile human being. And I don't know. I came to myself there. I think I got out of the big machismo thing. Because like that would have been, I don't know, I mean, it made it hard for me to, I mean, I could always relate to guys, I guess. I mean, but that was only half of half the people. I mean, and it made it easier. I mean, I came out of the machismo thing, like, because I became interested in my work and getting something done. And it wasn't important anymore, you know, because it's the atmosphere in the States, you know. You got to be tough. In reality, you got to have a tough image, I guess, to survive. I mean, to get people to leave you alone. I think I had acquired that also, to get people within the temple itself to leave me alone, you know, because I figured if I was mean, you know, people wouldn't come up and talk to me because I saw what they were doing to Dad, you know. They took advantage. But down here, I could think about it, you know, and I got out of it and everything. And now, it's helped me because I can relate to females, too. I mean, I know what a bitch it is to be a female, and you know, every guy walks by and looks at you, just, you know, just like, you know, just sexually, they undress you. You know, I mean, they look at you like, you know, that's all that's on their mind, and now I feel like that I don't come across that way, and I don't think there's any women that do, you know, I really don't think there's any women that think I do. Because that's not important. I mean, what's important is relating to them and letting them know that there's somebody here that cares about what they think and gives a damn about their mind. And I guess it'll come up, it'll make it easier for them to, like, because I think they feel like they gotta prove that they're not objects. And when they do it, they come on too strong. And when they come on too strong, they just they turn people off. You know, they make guys hostile and make guys worse. And I don't know. Like, let's take Ronnie, right? The whole big thing with him has been trying to get him to appreciate the companion he has now, you know, and respect her, because she's a strong, I mean, she comes on pretty strong. She lets you know what she thinks and everything. And he used to come saying, you know, she had the nerve, you know, to say this or that. And I said, I changed the word nerve. I said, she had the right. She had the right to say that. And I got him to respect it and to appreciate it, you know. Because one thing I've always hated is to know, have people believe, I mean, they honestly believe something. And instead of checking it out with you, they go on believing it, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And half the time, more than half the time, when they come check it out with you, it's not the way they think it is, and it's not the way it looks. And I just think communication between people would be, I mean, the world would be better. You know, I mean, it sounds dumb, but the world would be better if people would say how they felt right then. And get it out, you know, get it out of the way, because then you could feel at ease. You could feel like, you know, if the person thought something about you, they'd say it. But now, you're always paranoid. Does this person really like me, or does this person feel this? I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean, if you knew the person would come to you when they were mad, you'd never worry about them being mad, because you'd know it. I mean, you'd know. And so. To help me in that. I think the best way of saying it, and I can describe it in the whole, in the States, I felt impotent. I mean, I felt all the time. I mean, you just can't, you can look anywhere in the States, right? I mean, you can just open your eyes, I mean, anywhere, and you see something you want to change, right? There's not a place, there's nothing, there's no place that there's not something that can be changed. And for the most part, everything needs to be changed. And you know, there's not a goddamn thing you can do, because people don't relate to you, and if you want to take it slow like I'm talking about, you can't get to know a guy well enough, you know, because right off the bat, the competitive tough guy conflict, and there's no real way of expressing yourself without them saying you're a jerk. Or even if they know you're right, they'll say you're a jerk because they know that's what they're supposed to say. And, you know, so there's nothing you can do. I mean, you just sit there, you know, and you go by and you see somebody getting beat on, you see your friends, you know. I mean, I've been walking with guys I hung out with, and they've been, you know, arrested, you know. And, you get searched along with them and everything. And I mean, just the whole mess. It's just, you feel, just put it out, you just feel impotent. And I come down here, and I feel just the opposite, you know. I mean, I feel potent as hell. I mean, I feel like I can go out. I mean, I'm building this place. I mean, like, when I came here, I mean, it was clear that there was no cottages, you know. I mean, that was bush over there. There were no dorms. All that was here was the original community building, the office, the warehouse, and the shop.
Oh, Christ.
And, my God. To feel so worthless, and then to feel so alive. I mean, I felt like I was doing something. I mean, I knew I was building something. And the big thing was to get as much as we could built before everybody came down, you know. I wanted to make a city out of this place, you know. But it was great. And it still is. But, yeah, it still is. It's still great. And, like, that gets back to, when people came down here, I didn't think they appreciated it. They weren't appreciative. And that 6 day, the crisis, man, I think it made them appreciate this place more, you know. I mean, at least you own something now, you know. At least you know you ain't, I mean, at least you ain't, know you ain't just living, you just ain't borrowing something. I mean, you know, this is yours. And I really got, I mean, I think I've got that. Me and a few of the other guys who were down here before probably have that feeling more than most people do, because, you know, we put it up. We built it, right? And, well, that's like, when I see somebody drop trash or anything, you know, it's like they're messing with mine. But I don't see it that way either. I see it as everybody, because that was the way we looked at it when we were building it. We weren't building it for us. We were building it for everybody. But I resent it when people, it gets back to like, yeah, you know, people ride in. They didn't have to go through this shit. You know, that we had to build a place, and they ride in, and they don't respect it. Like, I respected Dad, and I appreciated what he was giving me. They don't appreciate it. And after the crisis, now they appreciate it more. So, like I say, you know, it gets back to that one thing, you know, that people, unless they're made to appreciate, if they're just given something, if they just handed something, they don't appreciate it. And that's why it's good for people to have to go through something to get it. I just tell you, this place has given me some meaning. This is why I'd lost it all. I really have. I've lost any kind of meaning. I mean, I just felt like we were just prolonging death, you know? I mean, I had no meaning, and now I got some meaning. Every time I see them kids, I mean, every time I see the little guy, they come out here, you know, and they're so alive, you know, and ain't nobody tell them to shut their mouths when they got something to say. Even if it's wrong, you tell them it's wrong, but you don't, you know, you don't discipline them for it, you know. They're young enough, and they're responsive enough that you can tell them, you know, and explain to them. And, you know, they're just being raised totally differently, and it feels so good to me, because I've wanted... That's one thing I really have wanted for everybody to have had what I had with Dad. And Mom, too. They were both, they were an, I think they were an ideal combination. And it's good to see it, you know, not being done now with your children, be raised the right way. But I think, I mean, it's just going to be, I think I'm watching evolution right here, you know, I mean, it's a process. I mean, I'm just, they're going to be totally, it's going to be, they're going to be a superior human being.
When you say evolution from what to what? I mean,
from selfish human beings to caring human beings. You know, motivated not by selfishness, but by caring. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because one of the things, another thing that keeps me going, and all I needed to make me happy, because for the most part, anything that I've never had, the only foundation I've had is dad, and mom's love, especially dad. That's the only real foundation, because for the most part, we've had to move around, and, you know, I've never been able to become attached to anything. But I've always had one thing that made me feel good about myself and about everything, is that I feel, and I look around and I see a lot of people that do not feel, you know, that don't feel. To be able to look at, you know, something and say, you know, appreciate. I mean, I appreciate things that other people don't even notice, you know, not all other people, but a lot of people. I don't know. I laugh at things that other people don't even find funny. Hard to describe, but I just, like, okay, I'll tell you one thing. Like when I'm with Luke, he's one of the, I mean, he's the brother I've identified with the most. If I do something that makes him, there's an expression he gets on his face that nobody else even notices. I mean, they don't even know what I'm talking about, but it's an expression. I've known him long enough. When I see it, I mean, I just hurt so bad inside, you know. Like, you know, one time me and him had an altar, you know, a little argument. It was, he got physical, I didn't, but I mean, I saw that expression and I feel guilty for days after, you know. But I mean, it makes me feel good to know that I feel, and I know I won't do anything stupid, because, you know, I won't hurt anybody. I mean, I will hurt people, I'm not perfect, but I mean, I know that I can avoid hurting people. Because I at least identify, and I try to know what's going through your head. That's the only way I can explain. I mean, I'm alive. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I think, just go along and, you know, take what they can get when they can get it.
No.
Remember